The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network, where we're here to talk about all things Tottenham Hotspur. And joining me, Sean Walsh, is Jude Summerfield. How you doing, mate? It's a great time to talk about Tottenham Hotspur, don't you think?
Oh, it is. Oh, there couldn't be a better time to talk about Tottenham Hotspur, quite frankly. It's it's a strong Tottenham Hotspur at the moment, not a flimsy one. So, we've got big cojones at the moment and we can start screaming about, screaming with our chest about how massive coys are. So, all good. How are you doing, pal?
Yeah, I'm good. You mentioned it there. Like, I feel sometimes when the season's kind of ongoing, I don't go as full-hearted with my opinions on the way things are, because there's always the danger that the next game you're going to be made to look stupid. And I shouldn't really think of that because, everyone in football, fans, media, managers, players, whatever, you're going to be made to look stupid because you put your nuts on the line with some of this stuff, and it's going to come back to bite you eventually. But it did not come back to bite us this season, Jude. We ended on such a high. It was the almost best case scenario for us, really. And it's really, really refreshing because we don't usually get the best case scenario in these situations. There have been a lot of times in my life where we've been chasing Arsenal and we have not been able to beat Arsenal. But this was not one of those cases. This was the complete opposite. This was brilliant. This was so kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I did some stats digging earlier, and the last from like March or something like that, I think Spurs have been in the best form out of any team. I think they've had a few extra games to play, but I think they picked up the most points in some sort of period of time. So it just shows there's that steel coming back to Spurs, which you haven't had for a good few seasons now. And it's always nice to pip a rival to an important spot, which fourth place is.
Yeah. You mentioned it there. Like, it feels like we really have turned a corner since March. And I think I was reading a piece on The Athletic earlier about how kind of Conte's demeanour kind of changed. Remember when we lost to Middlesbrough in the FA Cup? And it was like one of the first times where we'd lost a game, but he hadn't really gone ballistic. He was kind of changing his approach. And I think the first game after that was we beat Everton 5-0. I believe that was the first game after. And from there, we've just looked like a really ruthless winning machine. And there's been, I think the only blips along the way have been the Brentford and Brighton games. So we've really turned on when we really needed to. I thought the season was done when, you've seen that graphic a lot in the last few days. I think it was after like match day 27, 28, something like that, where Arsenal were way clear in fourth and had multiple games in hand, particularly on us. We were mired in like seventh or eighth, and it just looked over. And I really thought it was over. I remember writing an article after we lost to Wolves saying, because we lost to Southampton a couple of days earlier, like, Spurs have unraveled their own season. But we managed to get our shit together, Jude, so I'm really happy.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. I think we should start, go a little bit back in time, which feels like a long, long time ago now, to the Burnley game, because we weren't here last week to review it. So, what were your thoughts on the Burnley game? Because I was there, and it's pretty obvious this was not a vintage Spurs game. This was just a game where, everyone's looking at the calendar and thinking, all right, even if they do Arsenal, that Burnley one's going to be the real kind of test of their character. Mm-hmm. And it kind of was, because Spurs weren't at their best. Burnley came, and they had a job to do, and they did that job for the most part really well. I thought they were very resilient. I thought they managed to take the sting out of the game at times when they needed to, and then they were really undone by a dodgy handball call, which, you know, I've seen go against us so many times, so I'm not losing my mind over it. But you could really sense in the stadium, even though we were never in any real danger, I know Ashley Barnes at the post, but I was like expecting some effort from about 25 yards. Mm-hmm. We were never in danger, but you could feel it was so tangible and palpable, the feeling of nerves around the stadium. Was that like your home?
Yeah, it was very nervy, wasn't it? I mean, to play that game on the Sunday at 12, like 3 days after such an emotional North London derby, which, to be fair, in that game, they didn't expend the most amount of energy that they have in other games this season. But even so, the quick turnaround was a bit of a dodgy one. And then, yeah, like you say, they didn't create much out of nothing, but like, neither did Spurs, really. I think they dominated possession and had more shots, but, you know, Burnley still looked a threat here and there. And like you say, that Barnes shot was more out of nothing. And he scored a screamer against Spurs before, I think, maybe like 6 or 7 years ago.
I was thinking that. It was the same day that Lamela scored his first Premier League goal, yeah. I remember.
Yeah. So, it would have made sense if that one had clattered in.
Yeah.
And the handball one, I don't think I'm ever really going to think that's a penalty, but... You know, like you say, you know, you win some and you lose some, and some decisions go your way. And in this age now, where it goes upstairs and you can see an arms out, doesn't matter how much contact there is. And this was like, it was almost like the thinnest cricket edge through to the wicketkeeper. That's all it was. If you got Snicker up, then there would have been the slightest little murmur and little else. but yeah, in this age, you get those penalties and... And yeah, we just have the right guy to stick away the penalties, don't we? We've got Harry Kane on them, and you sort of never feel like that's going to be missed. So that was nice.
He said he didn't hit it cleanly though, so it did look like he scuffed it. It was right in the very corner. I thought for a second it had gone wide.
This is the thing: he always smashes them, which is what gives the goalkeeper no chance. But yeah, he didn't get it at all. Yeah, somehow it was a post and in job. So. So yeah, I mean, it's a fair while away, that game. But it was another game where Downs and Sanchez played really well at the back, coming in for Romero, who obviously missed that game in the Norwich one. And yeah, if it wasn't for Nick Pope, we probably would have won by a fair few goals, and it might not have been such a sketchy end to the game, which is what it was, because, you know, when they bring Wout Weghorst on and... You know, I keep on bringing him up as if he's some sort of, you know, welcome to world-class striker, which he's not.
Really. He's not. He had that really, had a really fast start, and he kind of really tailed off. And, you know, he missed a big chance, which kind of helped seal Burnley's fate. So,
yeah, you know, it's just like a big shithouse up front. You just naturally get scared of them, no matter how good they are.
He's perfectly Burnley. So, you know, I hope he enjoys the championship. so after that, You could feel the relief at full time that this was a massive hurdle, and I tried not to buy into the idea that Arsenal were going to slip up the next day against Newcastle, but I couldn't help but feel that the momentum had really shifted from that derby, that it was more than just a 3-0 win. It was a real kind of statement that Spurs really kind of have it all together now, and it was now Arsenal's to lose, and they were really kind of wobbling. And I'm going to be honest. I intentionally set out not to watch this match. I did not want to deal with it. Me and you, Jude, we had an early flight on the Tuesday morning. So I went to stay with a couple of friends in East London. I got there just as kickoff started. And I turned my phone off for the next 2 hours. We watched reruns of Would I Lie to You? And that was it. promised myself, I'm not turning the phone on, because if I turn the phone on, then I'm going to be engrossed in it. And I'm engrossed in it. Then I'm going to be scrolling on my Twitter, and eventually I'm going to see a journalist tweet, goal, Saka, Martinelli, whoever. Yeah. And it's going to like deflate me. And I was like, I'm just going to do a proper kind of old school Football Manager thing. I'm going to sim to end. I'm not watching it. Whatever the result is, and I can't affect that. And there's no point in me trying to keep up with it. Mm. And I could not believe, I've never known myself to be so happy about a result that didn't happen from a game involving Tottenham. Because open up, turn my phone back on, straight onto FOTMob. Didn't look at any of my messages, made sure not to look at the messages. Straight on FOTMob. Newcastle 2, Arsenal 0. And I just kind of was like, it felt like a dream. It felt like one of the, I remember having dreams like years ago and years gone by against Arsenal when we were at school, like dreaming that we'd won on the last day and they'd lost or something. I remember really vividly it happened in the 12-13 season, you know, when the 1-1 at Newcastle thing. Ironically, Newcastle involved again here and actually helped us. So, yeah, felt really, really, really great after that. How did you cover the match? How did you view the match?
Well, yeah,
I'm assuming you didn't turn your phone off like I did.
I didn't. I couldn't, unfortunately, mate, because while we were off to Barcelona the next day, I was on the late shift that Monday night. So I had to...
Oh, yes, you were, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to check into the Premier Inn at Stansted with its dodgy Wi-Fi and all. I had to pay for some better Wi-Fi, unfortunately, so I could actually do my job. because I wouldn't have been able to... Because I had to do player ratings for the game that evening. And to be honest, like, I mean, I would have rather have watched Bob Mortimer chatting about his teeth for an hour than watch that game because I was a bit of a nervous wreck. But yeah, to be honest, I wasn't getting too drawn into the whole momentum thing either because I wanted to see how Arsenal would bounce back in that game and whether they really did have the balls to them if that works. And they just totally didn't. Because Newcastle were brilliant on the night and Arsenal were missing a few players in defence and just couldn't get going whatsoever. So yeah, it was an excellent result for Spurs, obviously. And I just loved that the first goal was an own goal from Ben White. Not specifically it coming from Ben White, just that, you know.
You got a vendetta against Ben White as an
ex-player. Yeah, exactly. No, but just like the first dagger to the heart of their Champions League dream was self-inflicted, you know. that's what I liked about it.
Very easy narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Very easy narrative to push. But yeah, they just didn't have any, Arsenal didn't have any midfielders who were getting close to Guimaraes and Joe Ellington. They didn't really fancy it. You know, you saw Granit Xhaka come out afterwards and say, like, if you don't fancy the fight, then don't come and play, which, you know, is always quite jokes when that's the player that's trying to, you know, rally trying to do something better. I've heard he's been better this season, and I think, you know, sure, but, you know, it's still a bit Arsenal, isn't it? So
yeah, it's like cool.
Yeah. So
that's it.
So yeah, I was doing the player ratings at Stansted. When the first goal went in, I went, let out a little fist pump because the other guys I was staying with were still at their dinner table finishing off food. It was just me on my table. I got a message on Slack being like, dude, how are you doing? We can't hear you across the dinner table. I should have really been screaming like, fucking come on, amazing. But I just
got those. I would have been
kept it professional, of course. So
you know, there's no room for that.
Yeah, two seconds of fist bumping, and then when the second goal went in, that was sort of like the moment where I was like, okay, this is in our hands now. And I know the week building up to a final game on a Sunday can be a long one. Thankfully, we were occupied for most of it. We didn't even really talk about it that much in Barca, did we? We weren't shitting ourselves there, which is good. I think on the Friday was quite bad, just because it was a whole day of traveling and I couldn't stop thinking about it whilst being really, really tired and just wanting to go to sleep. it was that was keeping me from falling asleep on the plane, which was a bit annoying, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, Saturday came, Sunday came. And it was all grand. It was the general feeling going into Norwich is, you know, we try to I'm trying to get away from this you're not Spurs unless sort of mindset, because like I've got the energy for it. I think it's bollocks having seen Spurs over the last few months and how good they've been, to be like, oh, they might go to Norwich and lose, which, you know, could have happened, but at the same time, it's one of the worst Premier League teams I've ever seen. So,
One of the most useless, for sure.
So useless. They cannot hold a defensive line.
They always have these stupid defensive errors, like unbelievable. They find a new way to do it every game. But to your point, you're really going to like this. I was not as confident as you. In fact, just to quickly fill in, if you don't follow us on Twitter, Jude and I were in Barcelona for a 90-minute editorial summit this week. So that's why we couldn't do pod earlier in the week. We had a really nice time out there. And you mentioned it, Jude. We didn't talk about this game. I didn't want to because I was embarrassingly terrified that something bad would happen, that there'd be like a second minute Norwich running behind. Davinson Sanchez goes in flying. He gets a red card. Spurs has to play the game with 10 men. Mm. Norwich somehow find a way to do it. You remember when we lost to Bournemouth with 9 men in 18-19? That was what was going on in my head. And I know this Norwich team are way, 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 way worse than that Bournemouth team. But I'm not saying it's because of the past that I was like this. I was just so kind of afraid of the fall, because if we had lost, then it would have been pretty seismic. So I was afraid of that. But managed to get through it. Managed to get through the week. And
so each night when I asked you if you're all right, when we were 4 or 5 pints deep and you said, yeah, I'm fine, mate, you were just lying to me. Because that's all that was going through your head.
It's fine, we're not actually fine. Surely you're all right. Yeah, fine, mate. It's spooky! Yeah, that was what was going on in my head. Yeah. But yeah, so thankfully I can look back on this week as one of my favourite weeks of my recent life, because that was really good. Neither of us could actually watch this match, Jude, because we were busy being football men at other football games. I was at Brentford Leeds to watch Leeds come up with the greatest save. I have no idea where that performance came from. I did not see that in them. And you were at Brighton to watch the Seagulls and West Ham's Europa League hopes.
Yeah, so yeah, it was a pretty good day, all things told. Brian, our good little team, and I enjoy following them. And
how did you cover the match? Because you mentioned you might stream it going into it. Did you actually buy the stream?
I've got a black market app on my phone, which gives me loads of streams that I can watch.
He's right here, officers.
Yeah, no, it's totally legal, obviously. So, I mean, the Wi-Fi wasn't great at the stadium, so it was sort of buzzing in and out, and I was trying to keep as much of an eye on the Brighton-West Ham game. Thankfully, it was the first half was pretty terrible, so, you know, I was sort of able to just, like, you know, for a few minutes here and there, watch the Spurs game. But, yeah, it was quite tricky keeping track of both of them, and thankfully, of all the games on Sunday, I think only Leicester Southampton had little else riding on it. So Brighton West Ham was quite of a, you know, Brighton got their best ever Premier League position and West Ham got Conference League, but there wasn't any we weren't sending any PNs out regarding the the final result of the match. So it was good, and thankfully we did manage to get it all sorted, which is good.
Yeah, we got over the line. And I was just trying to keep updates on a Twitter feed next to the stuff that I was writing. But the Wi-Fi was strangely terrible at Brentford, which hasn't really been this season. It's been fine usually. But yeah, I think I stopped kind of intensely following at 3-0, which I believe did Song get the last two and Kulusevski got third? Is that right?
Kulusevski got the third, yeah.
So it was after Kulusevski did a bit of his Iron Robin impression there.
Oh, such a good goal. We'll talk about
watching the highlights back, just like we talked about, it just seemed that Norwich kind of self-destructed, and we've talked about it a lot on this pod this season. If you give us a chance, which could lead to a bigger chance to score, like you just give us a bit of space, an opportunity for our guys to run at you, then we will kill you. And that is basically what happened in the first half.
Yeah, I think the very first chance the first big chance the Spurs had was Højbjerg getting on the end of a Kulusevski run and pass, wasn't it? And to be honest, the amount, you know, the ease in which Spurs got in behind for that move, that sort of settled me down a fair bit, because it's like, oh, well, they're not going to now shut up shop and stop Spurs from creating chances, are they? They're not defensively good enough for that. Like, I think Sam Byram got booked quite early. He went off afterwards anyway for a minute, but it was you know, their centre-backs on a yellow, you know, they have to be a bit more careful.
It is literally Sam Byram there, so.
Yes, as well. And their midfielders just can't hold a light to ours. So,
That's what I mean, they can't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. Just slagging off Norwich for no reason. But yeah, as soon as we got that big chance, then obviously they decided to just not track a midfield runner in Bentancur, and then we got the opener. I know you said you switched off after.
I can't believe he squared it.
Yeah, well, I can. You've seen his shooting, right? He's a fucking awful.
Good point. He would really thought he would be the hero in that Burnley game. I remember that, actually. Yeah, good point.
He cannot shoot for toffee, mate. But you know, he got two assists in the game, and that was definitely the right move. Just stick it on a plate for Dejan to just stick it away. And
it's quite similar to Kulusevski when he got the opener at City as well. I couldn't believe someone squared it at that point either. So
yeah, but just took the keeper out of the game, just an easy tap in. Well, we better start calling Kulu a tapping merchant then, if he's done that before. Yeah.
Did he score in the Everton game?
I'm not sure. Well, he's got five in total now.
Because I feel like all of his goals have come away. So he got two at Norwich. One at Villa.
One at City.
And one at Leeds.
Did
he score at Leeds? I don't think he scored at home. Because I've been going to every match dying to hear the chart get going when he scored.
Yeah, and it hasn't happened. Yeah, he loves it away from home. Yeah, he was brilliant again. That was a really nice opening goal. And then the second goal, which was just after the half hour.
Tim Krul finally repaying us after 2013.
Right? 13-14, Tim Krul. My God, that 1-0 loss to Newcastle just sticks in everyone's mind. That was quite fun. Actually, you know, Tim Krul starting was quite jokes for us, wasn't it? Because it was like, oh, fucking hell. For fucking hell, you know?
Yeah.
He's going to do it again. Yeah, you dirty little bastard. You've done it again. but yeah, he sort of showed his age and, you know, declining quality somewhat with that attempted pass out, which...
Really instinctive pass from Bentancur as well.
Oh, yeah, it's lovely.
I was surprised how accurate it was.
Yeah, lovely little clip and all Kane had to do was just stoop and head it in. And it was pretty much plain sailing from that point on. There wasn't really any jeopardy, regardless of what Arsenal were doing. Mm. Obviously, Arsenal went and smashed Everton, but we didn't need to worry about the game anymore. And yeah, they just sort of coasted until the second half when they started chasing Sonny's golden boot, didn't they?
Started with that Kulusevski chance, didn't it? You know, he's strong. He's so kind of like. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a player that's really like Kulusevski in the way that he has this kind of mix of strength. He has kind of deceptive pace, not like searing pace, but enough to kind of beat a man.
Using strength to like beat a man is quite an odd one, isn't
it?
Because for that goal, he literally shrugged the fella off.
Yeah. I know there's someone that I'm thinking of. I can't think of who the profile is. If someone actually does have a better idea than me, then please do tell me, because it's really racking my brain every time that I watch this guy. But yeah, so he takes the ball, he rounds Krul, has a lot of time to get a shot off, gets kind of caught in two minds. Do I just put it in the empty net or do I square to Son? And in the end, it's kind of a tap with his right foot and Son's already now being marked and gets cleared off the line and he kind of gets taunted by the Norwich fans for it.
Yeah, so it kind of reminded me of that.
When Elijah 20th and you're 2-0 down.
Kind of reminded me of that. You know, when Spurs went to Stoke 15-16, it was like a Monday night and they won 4-0.
Oh, yes,
like
very good reference. I enjoy this.
And Dele was like clear for on goal and he just smacks the post. From 2 yards out, it's like all you have to do is just trickle it in, mate. And he just smacked the post. And then here, Dejan was like, it caught between two minds between what he wanted to do. And he could have just smacked it in. But
and similarly, both scored really good goals after.
Yes. Yes, they did. They did. Oh, man. It was like postage stamp, that third goal, Kulusevski's second. It was, Spurs were just getting in down that right just so frequently. Whoever was playing left back for Norwich was just having an absolute mare trying to pick up. Emerson didn't really get that far forward from what I saw. But Kulusevski was just so...
What are the comp makers going to do now?
I know.
He did drop a season review one before we started this, actually. It was about 55 seconds long. Really? It's actually largely based on, you know, the header, which was saved by Ramsdale.
Yeah.
It's largely based on that and the fans are reacting to it.
It's just like 6-7 angles of that one chance that did go in.
Oh, okay.
He scored a goal this season, right? So he scored against Newcastle. So why isn't that in there? Remember that one that, yeah, where he just
I was there for that, yeah.
I think all the Oh What a Night boys were there for that one, which is
was that the one that we were all there for?
I think so, yeah.
We were definitely all there for one, I can't remember which one.
Yeah, we didn't get to chat about it, but yeah, we all were definitely there. But yeah. That was a nice guy.
And then yeah, we had after he missed a couple of really good chances, Son finally takes the lead in the Golden Boot race. Firstly, one which the camera isn't really paying attention to when he first gets it, where Lucas has come on at this point and he kind of slips him through and it's really kind of simple finish under Krul. And then vintage Son Heung-min, where just doesn't really seem like there's any danger, just quickly one shift onto the right, let's fly. And it's almost like you can't really believe that he's generated that much power with such little kind of visible force behind it. You know, I think the one that was similar to it, remember we scored away at Middlesbrough at the start of the 16-17 season?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one.
It's almost identical to that one, I think.
Yeah, absolute beauty, mate. It was sort of getting to that point where it was like, get the ball to Son. Just get the ball to Son and see if he can stick in a few. when I was looking at the highlights after the game, that fourth goal, it was like, oh, and Son's throwing and he scored. There's no like build-up or anything.
It's just like, what? Did they just cut it weirdly? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it was strange. It was really, really strange. It was like some amateur video going on there. But yeah, that was a nice goal. And it came like 2 seconds after Lucas came on for Kulu, didn't it? And he grabbed a nice little... Yeah. I'm really not sure how deliberate that flick was. Because like it's... I guess it is because it's the sort of thing that Lucas tries every game and then
he'll tell you he meant it.
Yeah, sure. He will. But it usually doesn't come off. But in this instance, it did come off, which is excellent. And yeah, just a nice cold finish. And when Son gets into those sort of positions, you do think goal now because he's just so cold. He's so precise with his finish. Lovely way he just like opens up his body and just plays it into that corner. That took him up to 22, didn't it?
It did.
22 goals. Awesome, awesome strike.
And then I think, I don't remember at what point the match was, but someone did find a video where Son does find out that Salah has scored and that he needs to, if he's only scored one at this point, then he knows he needs to get another. And if he's already scored two, then it's done. He's going to win it anyway, but he's going to have to share it. But you know me, Jude, you know I'm a big, I'm banging the drum of the non-pen goals. To get 23 without one of them being a pen, without having one just kind of laid on the plate for him like that, that's properly, properly insane. I mean, for someone who doesn't play as a central striker, I know a lot of people are going to say, like, you know, the wide forwards are basically like the strikers these days, but it's still not the same thing. Son isn't the guy that's holding the ball up. He's not the guy that's providing more of an aerial threat, you know. He's just, you especially when you look at when we started the season, I believe he had 4 goals by the time Conte arrived and 19 after. I believe that was the ratio to it. So yeah. He was the, I think, do you remember the Aston Villa game after the North London derby? And it really felt like, okay, he's really starting to be the guy that's going to drag us through the mud again. And so it's nice that this season, for at least since, like we said, March, we've had a really good cast around our two world-class forwards. And this is what can happen. You know, Kane's won 3 Golden Boots. This is the second most in Premier League history. For him to be in the side with someone who can also win a Golden Boot, the attacking potential we have. This is what Spurs have been about. It's not about the Nuno not knowing how to play. It's not about the Mourinho just being defensive and having this kind of small mindset every game. This is it. This is the attacking football, the beautiful football, not even like Barcelona tiki-taka. I mean, like, entertaining me. I go into these games, I expect us to wallop these teams now.
Yeah, well, it's the good thing is it's now just about being solid in central areas at the back and in midfield, and then just letting that front three do their thing. I mean, Son for him to win the Golden Boot is just, it's just an incredible effort. Yeah, 23 goals, no penalty goals, like you said, and he's getting better year on year, which is odd for somebody who's like going to be, I think he's going to be 30 in the summer, but he just keeps on. Last year, he got like 17 league goals. This term, it's 23. And his link-up play with Kane is obviously still brilliant. And he's got another power in Kulusevski now who can free up space for him. This is what's been great.
He's only 22.
He was only 22, yeah. And a very early 22 as well. He's not going to be 23 for a while. So
that's so much experience at the same time.
Yeah, and he's like, I think a few people, when we asked about what sort of player Kulusevski is, when we got him in January, we got told he was like quite... Was that? I'll keep going. We got told he was quite a confidence player. And I think just like that goal he got at City just straight away just sort of showed him that, right, I can smash it at this level. And he's continued to contribute more assists. I think five goals and eight assists since January is just, it's that extra dose of attacking quality that Tottenham needed in that front three. Because before they'd have Lucas playing, and he could score like a wonder goal every 15 or 20 games, but not really contribute much else. And then Stevie Bergwijn obviously just never really gets around the team and just comes up with little moments of magic here and there. But that front three, it's all about just keeping it solid, which I think Spurs have done within those central and defensive areas, and just letting that front three just connect with each other and getting good balls into the box. You saw like Kane getting out wide and just firing brilliant crosses into Son. Mm. I don't know how he didn't score that first one.
Roy Hodgson saw the vision.
Yeah. But what's so good about that from Kane is that he barely has a look up. He's just like, right, I'm sticking it into an area. Execution.
It's
like,
it's very Eriksson-esque. The way he started doing this now.
Yeah. He just sticks it into that area. That's like just that corridor of uncertainty. And sometimes, somehow, Sonny doesn't score. I really don't know how he doesn't, but it was a great save. But yeah, for Sonny to win the Golden Boot is just a miraculous, miraculous effort. And it's so good that he just loves Spurs so much. And that he's, you know, I keep seeing people trying to, you know, push a certain narrative. And I think we can both agree, Sean, that we are not going to do that on this podcast. No,
we're not.
Absolutely not.
No. I do want to just quickly touching back on Kulusevski. This is quite an interesting debate I had with some of my friends yesterday. Do you think he was more important, the more important signing in January, or do you think Bentancur? Because the argument was Kulusevski's come in, he's put up these great numbers, he's a really amazing player. But the drop off to him is Lucas Moura, who, okay, he's obviously not as good, but he would at least provide something. Mm. And then beyond there, you'd have Bergwijn, who, like you said, has come up with some important moments for us. Whereas with Bentancur, the drop off to him is Winks. And it feels like every time that we started Winks since Conte's got here, it's been like, we're playing with one less man. And I don't mean that on a personal level, because I really like what Harry Winks has done for us, obviously, but he's just not the same player anymore. And you can see that Conte's only real willingness to use him down the stretch was when Bentancur just needed a breather for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think from a more practical level, I would say Bentancur over Kulusevski, maybe just because if you didn't have Bentancur going in there, then you don't have that same level of control for the attacking players to go and do their thing. I know, you know, that's from a practical level. I know who out of the two has my heart more. I know that it's the ginger Swedish fella. But yeah, like you say, the drop off from Bentancur to Winks, it's just that there's no control, or there was no control when Winks was playing.
Yeah.
And if you're going to, you know, if you're playing from side to side and you're sort of preying on an opponent giving you some space to do some damage at a certain point, then I don't think Winks really has that sort of facet to his game to make the difference in central midfield areas to start for Spurs even. Like
he's definitely, as the weeks have gone on, he's definitely started to build more of a relationship with Højbjerg as well. Like, this feels like more of a natural fit for him in midfield. I've been impressed with Højbjerg down the stretch for sure.
Højbjerg's been great in the last month or so. The way he just recovers the ball, I think they work in tandem really, really well, which is what's going to make which is what's going to make Ollie Skip coming back from injury
quite interesting,
an interesting little subplot. So yeah, that'll be fun. I do hope they go out and get somebody a bit more creative for that central midfielder area, because I think when, for example, that Burnley game, when teams do sit in, I don't think Højbjerg and Bentancur quite have that creative spark to pick a killer pass. I know it sort of comes from Kane and Son. You look to those players to create anyway, but sometimes you need the player to play that first pass so that they can get in and they can do the damage. So we'll see. But yeah, Bentancur, I love his little turns as well. I think he's grown in confidence.
They still scare me from time to time. I can't remember, it was against West Ham when we were winning 2-1 and he's in a real pickle at the back and he just got his Cruyff turn out of it, and I was kind of like, I know everyone was kind of like losing their minds on it, I was kind of like my god, that was so close. I was like, that was the complete opposite. I was like, don't do that again, please.
Yeah, was that his first game? I think it was, right?
No, the West Ham game.
I thought we played them in like the League Cup or something like that, and he might
I meant the league game.
Oh, in the league game, we won March. Like 3-1. Oh, yeah, but that was a stressful game anyway, wasn't it, for some reason? We should have battered them, and yet only won. Well, we won 3-1 in the end, but only for a goal at the very end. But yeah, Bentancur, brilliant. I go with him.
You got any more post-Norwich thoughts? Because just quickly, we are going to do a proper season review, hopefully with more of the guys here, either later this week or next week. But you got any more post-Norwich thoughts?
I don't think so. I mean, I like that Spurs are smashing teams now rather than, you know, at the start of the season when they were 1 or 2. Well, I mean, the first two games were 1-0, weren't they? But I do like that they can open up teams almost at will. I know Norwich had very little to play for and are pretty terrible, but it was good that they were running riot and that we could
still going to do it.
Yeah.
You could tell they wanted the season to end so badly.
They really did. They really did.
They were like me on Monday night, just seemed to end.
Yeah, very much so. But apart from
you
that...
You and I are not so different, Norwich City.
Yeah. Apart from that, not many thoughts.
All right, cool. I guess we have some listener questions, so we can move on to those before we do a little bit of a debate. So, from Richard Craggs, how does it feel for the name of the podcast to make sense again? Because... I personally thought, Jude, I thought that we'd cursed it because we started this, late winter, early spring 2020? It was one of the last, it was like the last month or so when we were in our 90-minute London office in Liverpool Street, which we sadly now no longer own, you know, rest in peace. But I did feel like that was a cursed time as well. That was, Kane had already been injured. Son was about to get his injury as well. It looked like we were going to have a dark, dark end to the season where, because Mourinho didn't know how to play without those two players, that we were just going to slide down the table.
It was very, very depressing Mourinho times, wasn't it? And I was like, can't really see a future with this. I know we sort of got a little better and then got a whole lot worse later on. But yeah, I'd say it feels very, very good. That was the only thing that sort of gave me a little bit of doubt heading into the weekend. It was like, when it's not going to make any sense if they don't win on Saturday, or Sunday even. And then that's going to...
They're going to come for us, Jude.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. It's very nice that song is going to make sense again. And I've heard it a few times, on Twitter, and I listened to Rule the Roost earlier. They stuck a little version of it at the very start, which I thought was quite jokes.
Yeah. Well, you know, they get a copyright claim from us and Frankie in the 4 seasons.
Yes, I refrained from sending Jack a DM. I just thought maybe we could get the solicitors involved first, and then
that's fine, mate. I'll do it. I'll let him know.
Yeah.
Prepare your response.
Yeah, I thought it was bullshit, to be honest, but you know, I avoid confrontation, like you know, Sean. You know, from the psychoanalysis that we had in Barcelona.
Yeah, under strength you've put pacifist.
That's so real.
All right, whatever, mate. All right. Okay, Philip Jones asks, will you bring back the theme music now? No, I don't actually know. I'm not in the editing process, so I don't actually know
where it's gone. I'm not sure. I'll have to send our editor the little clip again. But it should come back. think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I enjoyed it. Need some theme songs, you know.
It does, yeah.
Our third and final question comes from, I wrote this down properly because I didn't know how to say it. It's at IMKVNWNG, but his name, like the, not his handle, but the name of his thing is
Hello.
Hello. He asks, where did Arsenal get battered?
Say the line, Bart.
Everywhere they bloody go, dude. Everywhere that's where they get they battered.
Go. Everywhere they go, yeah.
Do you know what? They're going to be battered on Thursday nights next season as well.
Yeah. I will tell you something quite funny, actually. So before Tottenham-Everton a few months ago, which is, I went to cover that one at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which is sort of March, I want to say. I just put, you know, the classic football journo picture of the stadium looking really, really lovely. It was basking sunshine that evening, so I was like, yeah, I'm going to get that. And then one kid I went to school with just posted a little message just underneath saying, I just said, like, this is how football should be played on a Monday night. And he just replied, he's an Arsenal fan. He just replied, what seventh? Which in hindsight now, you know, I won't fire at someone unless I have reasonable ammunition like that. I don't like just, you know, we can slag off Arsenal as much, you know, here as we want to because it's funny. But like if my mate's an Arsenal fan, we tend to just have like quite level-headed discussions about it. But, you know, I put out a tweet yesterday just being like, oh, I can't believe Spurs have qualified for Champions League, et cetera, et cetera. And then, yeah, he replied to one of the messages in that thread saying, don't worry, boys, you will be in Europa by January. And I have been sitting on this screenshot of what seventh for fucking months now. So it was like that, you know, that meme of the guy trying to hold in a fart in class where he's all sweaty.
Yeah,
it was essentially that. So I just gave him a little bit of the I was wondering when the smart boy was going to pipe up, which I was very, very happy with, and just attached that picture of what seventh. So, you know, to that point, you know, that's a little story about Arsenal club and fans getting battered in many different ways, which is great fun for all, I'm sure.
Yeah. And we should mention, I hate the term bottled in football because I think it's very kind of just nonsense.
Throwaway, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think the Arsenal bossed it. And everyone's going to say, oh, you know, before the start of the season, we weren't expected to get top four. No one really saw that coming for us. And it's just like, Arteta's been here for 2 years. He's come eighth back to back. What are you really expecting if you're really moving forward and you're happy with him at the helm? And they got into this position where if they'd won at Tottenham, they would have had it. That was it. Obviously, this is much easier said than done, but the remit was there. You win one game.
Yeah.
You're into the Champions League. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They threw it away. They completely self-combusted at Spurs. It sounds like they self-combusted at Newcastle. They just didn't turn up. That is a failure. To get into the position to achieve those kind of goals and just, that's the way you react to it after the season that you've had with all this supposed progress, with all this kind of maturing. And they go on about like the youngest team. I'm glad that someone picked out, I think it was another article from The Athletic where they ranked all the youngest teams. And we're there twice above them, youngest teams.
I mean, they have young players, but they've also got old fellas
in the top four. Yeah.
Like they've got Xhaka, Elneny, you know, when Lacazette plays. These aren't up-and-coming pros. They're like approaching 30 or gone beyond 30.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd add to that is I'd say them losing at Spurs was less of a bottle but more of a heads gone moment.
Yeah, just because I agree.
You know, if a little 30-second montage could be stuck into the dictionary under heads gone, it would be Rob Holding getting sent off. But then, to be fair, I'd say, I don't even know if the Newcastle game is bottling either. I just think they weren't. I just thought they were terrible just watching it. So it's a little bit different. But, you know, having a 6-point advantage going into the last sort of month or so. I know
their fans were making the comps of them in the Champions League intro.
They were. And to be fair, I don't know what their goals were at the start of the season, so maybe it's unfair to continue shifting the goalposts as to, you know, where they should finish. But I think you have 6 points. You should be finishing in the top four. But they had tough games and they got beaten, and that's why they came fifth.
Yeah.
And Spurs came fourth. Because Spurs showed that they had the steel about them to go on a big run. Like, Arsenal sort of went on that big run, but I think we said it before that maybe they peaked a little too early. And they were grinding out wins here and there, but they just peaked a little too early and couldn't. I don't think they had enough left by the end of the season, you know.
Yeah.
And just quick players.
So. Yeah. Just quickly touching back on the squad point, it's like, who do you think is in charge of that? That's Arteta. Arteta has an insane amount of control for how little he's actually done. Like, I know he won the FA Cup. Okay, whatever. Didn't actually, it's never translated to league success.
Yeah. Well, he's had plenty of time there.
Can do it.
So,
yeah, can do it.
You know,
do
he can build the squad he wants. So, there's no excuses there to be had there.
It came back to bite them, you know, because in the week leading up to the derby in January, they let two players go on loan, which, if they had, would have made them eligible to fulfill the fixture. Mm-hmm. And they trimmed this squad. They actually had the chance to sign Kulusevski at the start of January. I remember that. Mm-hmm. They were offered him. They were like, no, we're going to pursue other targets. Didn't get anyone else in because Vlahovic rejected them. Arturo Melo, that fell through as well, though I'm not sure actually what much he would have done for them. Mm. But this is on them. It's like we went and we were proactive about it. And I think this is probably the biggest credit to the board ever, that they were actually able to bring in a couple of players that were useful and they managed to shift the deadwood that Conte didn't want. Mm. And we were just better down the stretch. And I think the table can lie sometimes. If we had somehow not come fourth, I'd be banging the drum. It would sound bitter, but I'd be banging the drum that the table lies, because I believe that Tottenham are the fourth best team in England and not Arsenal, because I believe that firmly we're better than Arsenal. The table doesn't account for these kind of factors where, you know, under Conte we're much better than we were under Nuno, and the table has to kind of reflect that, unfortunately. So
yeah,
we're the better team. We deserve to be fourth. We deserve to be back in the Champions League. We're a Champions League quality team.
Yeah. We should thank Nuno for those 3 wins at the start of the season, though, to be fair.
Really important, looking back.
And for getting out of there as soon as possible, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to get beat like 3-0 every game, so the stadium turns and there is no other option but to get rid of you. So, we got out of there pretty quickly.
Yeah. So, moving on to, this is probably the final thing we do today. I posed a question on Twitter a few hours before we start recording this. And I didn't expect it to kind of blow up into a massive Spurs Twitter-wide debate. So I asked, at which point do you think Tottenham were better set up to tangibly succeed? Coming off 86 points under Pochettino from the 16-17 through to the 17-18 season, or right now under Conte going into next year? And I actually don't know what my answer is. I see the arguments for both. But for the sake of this, because you have a strong feeling that it's right now, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to argue for the Pochettino days. So,
sure.
I'll let you start. You have the floor.
Yeah, well, I went with summer heading into 2022-23 because I had seen quotes from Eric Dier and Hugo Lloris actively calling out the club, being like, now is the moment. Now's the time to show strength in the transfer window. Now's the time to back your manager. Let's go and be a really good team. You've seen the record that Spurs have from January to the end of the season. They've beaten really good teams. I don't know if we really had that sort of record in 17-18. I know we beat Liverpool, but I think we got beaten twice.
Beat Arsenal.
I think we beat twice by City.
We beat United, yeah.
I can't remember. It might have just been a home.
No, we lost.
Did we lose 1-0?
Martial going pouring rain.
Oh yeah,
that was led. You know that the Mourinho shooting game.
Yeah, it was.
I think it might have been, yeah.
But I just think there's more pressure on Tottenham to actually go out and have a big summer run than there was back in 2017, mainly because the stadium was still being built. I think the idea that Spurs were penny pinching at the time was quite renowned, and that there wouldn't be too much money to spend. And I think there was an excuse not to spend back then, if you know what I mean. They had a really strong starting 11. And we've seen that squad sort of fell apart, and it was because they didn't rebuild in that summer. But I just think if Conte isn't given assurances about the amount of spending power he'll have and the personnel that he'll try and get, aka winners. I know it seems a bit Mourinho saying I need proven winners. Like,
well, it's different. It's different when your manager's actually good, though.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we'll be going out and getting the Manny Matic. So
it'd be a little bit different.
But
God, we'd be right in those sweepstakes if Mourinho was here right now. I know it.
Yeah. I genuinely feel a lot more. I'm trying to stay as level-headed as possible, but it is exciting. Mm. And if Spurs do nail this summer with some really good incomings, I know essentially, you know, going through incomings like season by season, you sort of have like a 50% hit rate, don't you? So like some
unless you're Liverpool.
Unless you're Liverpool when it's like...
Maybe this is the turning point, Jude. Maybe Conte and Paratici together, they're going to form like... the rival to Michael Edwards and Jurgen Klopp, you know.
It'd be nice. I'm still wondering if just, you know, Paratici went to his old club and got lucky a little bit.
got lucky three times.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say that it's quite hard to get lucky three times in transfers in that kind of window of time.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll find out if he was just immensely lucky or not.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose for every Kulusevski and Bentancur, you'll get an Emerson. But Emerson's been good these last few months.
Even then,
I don't want to slag him up too much.
But this is Conte. We're talking about a world class coach.
Yeah,
I just said that the way that he would say it. You know, that's the way you'd start sentences. Like, we're talking about a world class coach. Mm. Like, that's the kind of way that he would do it. He's rubbing off on me.
Yeah. I think this season rather than. Because I also with Pochettino, you sort of knew he was getting the best out of what he had rather than being proven as a, I'm going to say it again, a winner with the right funds and incomings. You sort of knew you'd get top four at that stage, didn't you? Like 17, 18. The players.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, going that. Into, cause I think 16, 17 was a real litmus test. Was this like a sustainable way of competing with the big boys? But after that, every year, that he was here. I didn't have to think about top four. It was more, are we going to close the gap to the title chasers?
Yeah. I mean, this time around, I mean, heading into the summer, City and Liverpool, it's they're still so far and away the best teams in the land. So we'll just have to see maybe like by November, December. Because the thing is, those guys barely drop points and they pick up 90, 95 each season now. I know Liverpool...
Stupid totals.
Yeah, I know. I know Liverpool didn't get that many last season during the COVID season, just because.
I'm writing off that season.
I think so. But yeah, 2020. What do you think, mate? I mean,
so my arguments are, I've actually written this down because I had a couple of minutes of spare time before we started recording. So I think from 16-17 going to 17-18, obviously the big thing that rocked us was Kyle Walker forcing a move to Man City. He wanted to go. Fair enough. Danny Rose getting injured as well. That didn't really help. We didn't really know what his future was going to look like back then because it felt like it was quite secretive what was going on. But for the most part, we had a settled core of, if not world-class, then knocking on the door of world-class players who were, they're kind of like what Kulusevski and Bentancur are now. Like, they're young, but they're experienced. And I think they were just better. These were some of the best players in the league. You know, Kane, by the end of 2017, was the consensus best striker in the world because he was the one that was matching Messi and Ronaldo's totals. There was no one else in it. No, Lewandowski, Benzema weren't, they were at different points in their career. They weren't at the top. It was definitely Kane. And so I think you've got to factor that in. This is the best striker. Yeah, the best striker in the world. You can do anything, really. Mm-hmm. The previous two seasons, you add up the points totals, we were the best team, the most consistent team across that time. You know, I was going to say, you know, what trophy, whatever, but I thought that mattered. But I felt like because the players were so young, because the manager was relatively inexperienced, we still had that room to grow. We still had another gear to go into. That if we were on this journey together, everyone's kind of like, not organically grown, but you know, it's everyone's come from the same journey. They'd all been in a few years now. it felt very, to me, a bit like what Klopp had done at Dortmund, more like. So I mm-hmm. thought that was quite important. And now I have a couple of points which kind of discredit this season's argument. So I think the first is dropped an exclusive line about an hour ago. Conte is on PSG's list should they replace Pochettino in the summer, which seems really, really, really likely. Now, Spurs are confident that he's going to stay. Don't know what that really means, but, you know, Conte said yesterday, I'm going to talk with the board about mm-hmm. his future. And I personally believe he would stay. I don't really know what the motivation is to go to PSG besides the money, because I don't think they're good enough to win the Champions League. And Conte just isn't a Champions League manager. Another point there, he is not proven in the Champions League at all. He has not won a knockout game since 2013 when Juventus beat Celtic. That's the only tie that he's won in the knockout stage of the Champions League. So I think that matters if we're going to push on all fronts. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, we could close the gap to the league titles, but you want to do well on all fronts. We succeeded for the best part of this season playing one game a week. You know, all the stats were there. Conte mentioned it himself. It's better when we play one game a week. We're not going to have that next season. That's going to be a big thing. There's also going to be the disruption of the World Cup. We're going to have various players coming back at different points ready for a really busy winter period. I'm sure that unless we bring in, I'm talking a lot of boys, I'm talking like 5, 6, 7, even that's without selling anyone. We need more players than we do now, because Conte's kind of stressed. He's been playing with kind of 13, 14 senior players for the last 2 months of the season. We need more bodies. We just don't have the bodies right now, and we can't. Mm-hmm. We won't be able to compete. So I think it just felt from 16, 17, 17, 18, there was a lot more kind of calmness. There was a feeling that we were settled, that we were on the right track. Whereas as much as I'm championing what we've done this season, I'm championing the work that Conte has done, it's still that kind of question mark. I don't know. I know everyone's kind of, all the players come out, they're talking about it needs to be backed. We just don't know. And I don't know if that actually means anything, because, you know, Tuchel walks into Chelsea last season. They're a rubbish team. He turns them into European champions within 5 months. That's how quick football can change. Maybe you don't need to be planning. Maybe you just need to luck yourself into the situation. We got lucky that Conte rejected us. We stumbled into Nuno. That went horribly. Conte then comes again and solves it. Maybe that's the counter to that. You don't need to be planning. But I do think, is it really going to get better than Conte? Are we going to have a better manager than Conte if he does go?
Well, yeah. I just hope that we don't have that sort of sense of regret about a stalling summer where we could go on and hopefully achieve bigger and better things, and we don't take the opportunity to do it, because that summer will go down as one of the most horrendous in Tottenham's recent history, just because I know they were saddled by stadium debt, but of course there was the chance to really show Poch the ambition that the club had. And for one reason or another, he just didn't get the funding and it couldn't happen. I agree that it's not much of a settled atmosphere at the much because you've got at the moment, sorry, because there is a manager who will only stay if certain promises are made, which doesn't help, you know, helping fans feel a little more settled about their club. So, you know, in a week or two might go by and he might walk out. I mean, but I don't, the thing about that, I mean, firstly, PSG, I've never felt he's a PSG manager. How many players there are going to buy into what Conte is saying? How many people are going to be like, I will stop eating nachos and I will run myself into the ground for you every single game. I just don't think, I know there.
You mean new general manager Kylian Mbappe is not going to do the pressing that because he doesn't need to?
I don't see Neymar doing it. I don't see Lionel Messi doing it. I think Marco Verratti would be amazing under Conte, obviously. But I just think they need a Zidane type figure who just coddles them and, you know, makes them all think that they're really, really sick and pushes the ego to one side. It just doesn't seem to me like the right fit. But, you know, who knows?
Stranger things have happened.
Stranger things have happened.
I think actually Jack Pitbrook, I think it was him, he made a good point a few weeks ago. I think it was after, you know, the spat with Klopp, you know, he's saying, like, our Tottenham could play the way they play, well done their fifth. Well, it turns out we finished fourth, and that point cost them the league title. So shove it, Jurgen. But Jack Pitbrook made a point where he was like, why would Conte want to go anywhere else when it's like this in the Premier League? This is probably why he likes the Premier League so much. Every game is a battle like that. Every game has that kind of meaning to it. And when he gets PSG, he's not going to care if he's playing Strasbourg or...
Yeah, Metz away. Ooh. Amazing. Yeah.
Mm.
No.
It's just going to feel the same. And he mentioned, like, he wants to come back into coaching because it's like a drug to him. He's not going to get that same kind of thrill managing PSG when they just walk into these wins every week. It's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the same way. I'm not kind of like a guy who's like, oh, this title was an asterisk or a footnote or whatever, but I do question whether he would have that same motivation to really be a proper winner. Does a title with PSG really change the life of Antonio Conte? Probably not.
No, I wouldn't think so. And to be honest, like Spurs haven't been, well, they obviously haven't been perfect since he came in. But what they've done to finish fourth is fucking miraculous. It can't be underplayed just what a massive effort that is from all of the players. And you've got the hallmarks of a good Antonio Conte team in there. You've got players who were sort of maligned before contributing. You know, there are more goal threats around the pitch. And I just think it'd be a really, really strange move if he walks out because he doesn't get assurance, is fine. But if he didn't have the motivation to stay,
from what we've heard and from what everyone else in the Spurs episode, it does sound like he will get back. That he will have a lot of control of what happens this summer if he does stay.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea that he'll leave is a bit strange to me. But he's a very emotional guy, and if he doesn't get the right answer, but I think. It has to be seen as a sliding doors moment this summer, because there's a future where Spurs do get some proven generals and winners into their team, and they can go and, like, not stand toe-to-toe with Liverpool and City. I mean, they've showed they can do that on the pitch anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say compete with them at least.
Yeah, but and help them show, you know, the consistency to get towards that sort of 80, 85-point mark a season. Whereas, you know, there have been games where, you know, when someone like Harry Winks has come into the starting 11 and had to play against Wolves and Southampton, they've slipped up and they haven't got the results. So if they get leaders, if they get another big defensive addition, you know, there's chat about players from defenders coming from Serie A and stuff like that. If they make a really, you know, if Bastoni comes in from Inter, for example, and you've got Romero and Dyer.
That for me is the perfect one.
It's the ideal, isn't it? So, I just think he should stay. He should want to stay, and it sounds like he's going to get the backing. So, it's not something I'd be too worried about. I think he'll get the right answers, and
I think so as well.
Yeah, and I think we can look forward to an active summer, whether it sort of it explodes at the start of next season, and whether those sort of variables that you mentioned, like the World Cup and you know, squad depth, whether those come into play, we'll have to see. But I think he'll understand the sort of the good squad and the good feeling now around the club, and I think that should pull at his heartstrings and convince him to stay.
Yeah, here's hoping, because. Here's hoping.
It doesn't always work out, does it?
It doesn't always work out, but from in this moment in time, in this moment, as the manager would say, there's a reason for belief and optimism. We're back in the champion. You know, if we'd come fifth, I'd be very much shitting myself right now. But we came fourth. We've got the Champions League pool. We're in the Champions League. We're playing huge, unbelievable £1 billion stadium. We have Antonio Conte as our manager. I should mention this dude, actually. I don't know if you were there for this conversation. One of the nights in Barcelona, was speaking to guys on the 90-man German team, and they said that they thought the best coach in the world So yeah, if they could take any coach, Antonio Conte. So that's the reputation he's got.
Yeah, he goes into places, he fixes them up, he makes brilliant teams. You know, he's definitely, he's 100% up there. You know, he's definitely up there with Guardiola and Klopp. I mean, one, two, three, you can take your pick, but those three to me, they're the best three managers in the world.
Yeah, give them their team, he's winning the league.
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, can you imagine fucking Van Dijk, Matip, and Konate in a back three? Jesus Christ!
I've always wondered why Liverpool never tried the back three, because I felt like they would just win every game.
No, nobody's getting past those boys. Yeah. Alexander Arnold's got even more freedom at wing back. Jesus Christ!
Probably never tried this.
Yeah, not good with that. But you can just shun off Henderson and stick Thiago and Fabinho in there.
Yeah,
front. Yeah, let's not talk about Liverpool.
I've decided I'm planning to be the Liverpool manager. I'll fix him. Put me in charge. I'll win Saturday's Champions League final. Don't you worry. Don't know why you're laughing, Jude.
Sorry, mate. No.
It's very disrespectful, you know.
Nervous tick. So.
What, you don't think I can win the Champions League?
No. It's just pure nerves. You know, you're a great guy. Take care, yeah.
Okay.
I got to go.
Yeah. I think I'll do for this episode. Like I said, we will be doing a proper season review and stuff, hopefully with one of the guys here. Yeah. Later in this week, but
how good is it that you just, well, I just said it's just nice that these become long listens now that Spurs are quite good,
yeah,
stretching over the hour mark, which is nice.
And we don't need to worry about it because the season's over, we don't play again for a couple months. All we can chat all the rubbish we want about Arsenal being crap and us being amazing, and it doesn't really matter.
Exactly, we can just have nice,
it does matter because it's fact, because we finished above them. League table lies? No, it doesn't. Tells the truth. We're better than Arsenal.
Tells the truth. It would have lied had we finished fifth, but it doesn't lie.
Yeah. Right now, it tells the truth. You can write it down. That's a fact.
It's verbatim. Real life. Verbatim. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. All right. Thank you for sticking around and listening to this if you've got this far. Jesus Christ. Please subscribe if you do. It really helps us. Leave a rating. And we'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.